Imagine spending like millions of dollars securing this massive e-commerce platform with the absolute latest cryptography.
Right, you've got firewalls, endpoint detection, the works.
Exactly. You have entire teams just monitoring traffic to and core 7. And then someone crashes your entire server infrastructure using just 260 bytes of completely legal, ordinary web traffic.
Yeah, it's wild. No stolen passwords, no complex malware.
Just a tiny, silent, mathematical error running in the background. So today, welcome to the deep dive. We are looking at how the very systems designed to make the internet faster and safer are just being turned completely upside down.
It really is a reality check for the industry.
Yeah.
And looking across the landscape today, we're examining a really fascinating spectrum of vulnerabilities.
Yeah, we've got a great lineup for you today.
We're starting at that micro level, diving into how a single math error buried deep in infrastructure code can just, bring down a whole server.
Right.
From there, we'll look at the human element, specifically how attackers are weaponizing our trust in brand new security features.
Which is always terrifying.
It really is. And finally, we will explore this massive cybercrime operation that wasn't taken down by law enforcement, but was exposed entirely by the hacker's own embarrassing operational sloppiness.
I love those stories. And as we go through these, we are focusing on the mechanisms for you. You won't just hear that something broke,
Yeah.
You'll understand exactly how and why it broke.
Yeah, so you actually have the practical intelligence you need to defend your own networks.
Exactly. Minus the overwhelming jargon, hopefully. So let's get right into this first briefing item. It's a zero-day vulnerability dubbed XREI.
Ah, yes, XRE.
Right, and it was discovered by a researcher named Sebastian Ferrack at Fox.io.
Yeah.
This flaw impacts XQUIC, which is Alibaba's open-source HTTP3 and QUIC library.
Which is huge, by the way.
Massive. But the surprising part here is just the sheer absurdity of how little it takes to trigger this thing.
Oh, absolutely.
You don't need a login. You don't need to send malformed packets to trick the system. All it takes is like 260 bytes of completely normal QPI traffic to instantly crash the server process.
It's crazy. And Fox.io apparently tried to warn Alibaba like five separate times between April and May of this year, but got zero response.
Wow, five times.
Five times. So as we discuss this today, there is no patch, and there isn't even a CVE assigned to it yet.
It is a stark reminder of how fragile the underlying plumbing of the internet actually is,
Yeah, for sure.
To understand why 260 bytes can cause a catastrophic failure, we have to look at a mechanism called QPAQ.
Okay, let's unpack this. What exactly is QPAQ?
So QPAQ is essentially the header compression tool for HTTP3. Its entire purpose is just to make your web browsing faster.
Right.
When you visit a website, your browser sends a bunch of headers, things like your user agent or what languages you accept.
Stuff the server needs to know to render the page right.
Exactly.
Right.
But sending that same text over and over again wastes bandwidth. So QPAQ allows the server and the client to share a dynamic, synchronized table of these headers.
Oh, I see. So instead of sending the full string of text every single time, they just send an index number referencing that shared table. Precisely. And the way XQUIC stores the bytes for that table in the server's memory is through a structure called a ring buffer.
The ring buffer. Okay.
Yeah. Imagine a fixed block of memory. You write data into it sequentially. When you reach the very end of that block, instead of stopping, the pointer just wraps right back around to the beginning and starts overwriting the oldest data.
Got it.
It is highly efficient for continuous streams of data, which is why it's used in networking, but it requires incredibly precise memory management.
Right, because things are constantly looping.
Exactly. The problem occurs when a client tells the server it needs to grow that dynamic table. When you resize a ring buffer, XQUIC has to allocate a brand new larger block of memory in the background and copy all the old data over to it.
Okay, let's visualize this memory management aspect because I think that's where the failure actually happens, right?
It is.
Like in a normal array, copying data is straightforward, but with a ring buffer, your data might be split. Part of it is at the end of the memory block, and the rest is wrapped around to the beginning.
That is the core issue right there. In XQUIC's C code, there's a specific branch of logic that triggers when the data wraps around both the old buffer and the new one.
Right.
Say you are growing a 64-byte table into a 65-byte table, just adding one byte.
Okay, like moving apartments and you just have one extra box.
Exactly. And you do this right when the right cursor, the pointer indicating where new data goes, is hovering near the very end of the old buffer.
So it's right on the edge.
Right. The code has to calculate how much leftover data, what we call tail data, needs to be moved. But there's a fatal flaw in the arithmetic.
Let me guess, it counts the boxes wrong.
Yes. The code miscalculates that tail length because it sizes it against the new, larger buffer's capacity instead of the old ones.
Oh, no.
It thinks there are 70 tail bytes to move when there are actually only 6.
So the movers try to pack 70 boxes worth of stuff into a tiny van, blowing out the sides of the truck.
That's a great way to put it.
But wait, I'm stuck on something here. If the traffic is perfectly legal and follows all the QPACK rules, how does an overcount crash the server? I mean, are attackers stealing data here, or is it just causing a nuisance?
Right now, this is fundamentally a denial of service, or DOS.
Okay.
But the mechanics of the crash are fascinating. The system takes that overcounted value, the 70, instead of the actual 6, and it subtracts it from a small value to figure out the final copy length.
Right, doing the math.
But in programming, that length variable is declared as a sizeitid, which is an unsigned integer.
Unsigned meaning?
Unsigned means it physically cannot represent a negative number.
Ah, so it's like an old mechanical car odometer.
Yeah.
If you're at 0 miles and you somehow roll backwards, it doesn't show -1. It snaps all the way around to 999,999.
That is the perfect analogy. It's called an integer underflow.
Wow.
Yeah, when the server subtracts 70 from 6, it underflows and wraps around to a massive, near maximum positive number.
So it tries to copy that much data.
Yes. The server attempts a memory copy of that astronomical size. It tries to write gigabytes of data out of bounds, way past the allocated memory.
That's terrifying.
Now, Foxio noted that on an Ubuntu 26.04 build, a specific security feature in the modern compiler actually caught that astronomically bad length through an exception and killed the process.
Okay, so the system killed it on purpose to protect itself.
Exactly. That deliberate kill is what causes the crash. Without that compiler check, it just silently writes out of bounds, corrupting memory.
Wow.
And while Fox.io hasn't published a proof of concept for remote code execution yet, an unpatched, easily repeatable denial of service on major infrastructure is devastating.
Yeah, I mean, remember, XQIC is embedded in Tengen.
Right.
That is Alibaba's heavily modified web server that fronts massive platforms like Taobao and Alipay.
It's a colossal target surface.
So if I'm managing servers that utilize XQUIC for HTTP3, my immediate reaction is to just kill the QP dynamic table entirely.
Yep.
If I set the configuration for the max table capacity to 0, does that actually stop the vulnerable memory allocation logic from ever firing?
Yes, that is the most effective temporary mitigation right now. Setting that setting to 0 effectively disables the dynamic table.
So the vulnerable resize logic never even gets called.
Exactly. If that isn't feasible for your specific architecture, your only other option is to drop HTTP3 support entirely on those servers and fall back to HTTP2 until Alibaba officially patches the library.
Got it. It's terrifying that 260 bytes of legal traffic can take down a server because of a clean mathematical error.
It really is.
But in a way, math is predictable. What happens when the cryptography is totally bulletproof, but the attackers weaponize the user's trust instead?
That's a much messier problem.
Yeah. And that brings us to our next story, which is about threat actors exploiting the rollout of passkeys.
We spend a vast amount of time analyzing code vulnerabilities, but the human element consistently remains the most viable attack vector. This is especially true when organizations introduce new security paradigms. Users know they are supposed to upgrade their security, but they don't fully understand how the new technology is supposed to look or feel.
Exactly. The story here involves a threat actor tracked by Okta as OUNC066.
Yeah.
And they are tied to a notorious decentralized cybercrime collective known as The Calm.
Right. Very active group.
Yeah. They are aggressively targeting Microsoft 365 users across highly critical industries. We're talking healthcare, aviation, technology, food, and beverage.
Everyone, basically.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
And they are doing it using fake Microsoft Entra passkey enrollments. Microsoft has been actively allowing admins to nudge users to adopt passkeys to improve security, and these hackers are using that exact institutional momentum against them.
The precision of this campaign is alarming. Let's walk through the attack chain.
Let's do it.
It begins with vishing, which is voice phishing. The attacker calls the victim on the phone, posing as their internal IT department. They verbally instruct the victim that it is a mandatory requirement to register a new passkey for their Microsoft account immediately.
Creating that urgency.
Exactly. The victim is then directed to a custom-built, operator-controlled PHP phishing kit.
And this kit is not some static, poorly spelled, fake login page, mm-hmm. right? It is highly dynamic.
Highly dynamic. Huh. The victim hits the first page, the /gate directory. It just shows a loading icon.
Okay, pretty standard.
But behind the scenes, the kit is performing anti-analysis checks, verifying IP addresses to make sure security researchers or automated scanners aren't poking around.
Sneaky.
Once they clear that hurdle, the victim moves to an identify page for their username and then a password page.
Wait, I have to jump in here. Here's where it gets really interesting for me. The entire marketing pitch for passkeys is that they are the ultimate phishing-resistant tool.
Yes.
They rely on public key cryptography tied to physical hardware. Are the hackers somehow breaking the underlying cryptography of the passkeys themselves?
What's fascinating here is that the cryptography is perfectly fine. The math isn't broken at all.
Okay.
The hackers are entirely bypassing the enrollment process.
Ah.
Here's the deception. As the victim types their username and password into that fake page, those credentials are sent via a POST request directly to the attacker's back-end panel.
In real time.
In near real time. The attacker, who is likely a different operator from the one talking on the phone, enters those stolen credentials into the legitimate Microsoft sign-in page.
So they're essentially manually proxying the login while the victim is on the phone with them.
Yes, exactly. And if Microsoft demands a multi-factor authentication token from the real user, say an SMS code or an authenticator app push, the attacker's phishing kit instantly adapts.
Unbelievable.
The victim sees a processing screen, and then the kit serves them the exact MFA prompt they need to fulfill.
So the user thinks it's totally legitimate.
Right. The victim types the OTP into the fake site, the attacker grabs it, enters it into the real Microsoft site, and boom, the attacker is logged in. At that exact moment, the attacker registers their own passkey, like a YubiKey sitting on their own desk, to the victim's account.
But while the attacker is doing all that back-end setup, they need to keep the victim busy on the phone so they don't get suspicious or hang up, right?
Precisely.
This leads to the most diabolical part of this whole scheme. The phishing kit redirects the victim to a fake passkey register page. It's perfectly Microsoft branded.
They're very convincing.
And it prompts the user to write down a 12-word recovery key to confirm their new passkey. It looks exactly like a cryptocurrency wallet seed phrase. They even have a follow-up page where the user has to verify the final word of the phrase.
It is pure psychological manipulation. That 12-word recovery phrase does absolutely nothing technically.
Nothing at all.
It is solely a delay tactic. It takes time for a human to carefully read, write down, and verify 12 random words.
Yeah, that usually takes at least 60 to 90 seconds.
And that delay gives the attacker the exact window they need to finalize the real passkey registration on their end.
So devious.
The victim hits a done page, thinks they've successfully upgraded their corporate security, and hangs up the phone, completely unaware they've just handed permanent, persistent access to an extortionist.
Access that will survive future password resets, too.
Exactly.
So the defense here isn't technical at all. It's an education problem.
100%.
You have to retrain users that a real passkey setup is an operating system-level dialog box, right? It uses Windows, Hello, or Apple's Touch ID.
Right, it's integrated.
It's not a web page asking you to type in passwords and MFA codes while a stranger talks you through a 12-word recovery phrase on the phone.
That is the critical takeaway here. Deploying a new technology is only half the battle. If the user doesn't know what the authentic experience physically feels like, they will fall for a well-designed simulation.
Yeah.
Organizations must train users on the specific visual cues of legitimate enrollment.
We just looked at highly coordinated phishing kits that manipulate human psychology with incredible precision.
Which is scary enough.
But on the flip side, what happens when criminal organizations scale up so fast that they start making the same operational blunders as a disorganized corporate IT department?
You see the industrialization of cybercrime. You have brilliant initial access tooling, but terrible infrastructure management.
Which brings us to our final story. A cybercrime operation dubbed WP Shellstorm.
Yes.
This is a web shell access brokerage. They break into websites at scale, plant hidden backdoors called web shells, and package that access to sell to other criminals.
Right, it's a whole business model.
But this massive operation was exposed because the hackers left their own command and control server hosted on an IP address in the U.S. completely open to the public without a password for 22 days.
Just unbelievable.
Yeah. Threat intelligence teams from Sacredar and Credlalt Intel stumble onto it and downloaded roughly 800 megabytes of internal files.
Wow.
We're talking exploit scripts, toolkits, target lists, and even a hacker's typed command histories.
It is a phenomenal intelligence goldmine that pulls back the curtain on how these groups operate.
Yeah, what did it show?
Well, they aren't lone masterminds, right? They operate like mid-sized IT companies deploying Docker containers and managing databases.
So they have the same headaches we do.
Exactly. And just like a stressed mid-level employee at an IT firm, someone forgot to secure a directory on a Friday afternoon.
Amazing.
If we look at the context from their exposed files, the scale of their ambition was massive. They were using a Chinese search engine called Ofofa.
Ofofa?
Yeah, which is similar to Shodan. It's designed to index internet-connected devices and often provides better visibility into certain global regions. They used it to build their target lists.
And how big were these lists?
Those lists contain more than 1.4 million websites, primarily focusing on WordPress and Joomla installations.
Okay, wait, I want to clarify for you, the listener, that you shouldn't panic if you hear a number like 1.4 million.
Good point.
Being on a hacker's automated scan list is absolutely not the same thing as being successfully hacked. Out of that 1.4 million, researchers estimate only a fraction between 5,700 and 25,000 sites were actually compromised.
Right. Automated scanning casts a massive net, but the actual exploits require very specific vulnerabilities to be present.
So what was their main way in?
In this campaign, their primary weapon was an exploit targeting a bug in the Breeze caching plugin for WordPress, specifically CVE-2026-3844.
Okay.
Now, caching plugins are designed to speed up load times by storing external resources. This exploit only worked if a specific non-default setting called host files locally gravatars was turned on.
So how does that setting actually allow a compromise? Like, how does a caching tool let an attacker upload a backdoor?
When that setting is enabled, the plugin reaches out to the central gravatar server to download user profile pictures so they can be served locally.
Right, to save time on page loads.
Exactly. The vulnerability is a failure of input validation. The attacker intercepts or modifies the request, pointing the avatar URL to their own malicious server.
Oh, I see where this is going.
The Breeze plugin reaches out, expecting a .jpg image, but the attacker's server hands it a malicious PHP script instead.
And it just takes it.
Because the plugin doesn't properly validate the file type before saving it, it blindly downloads the script and places it in a web-accessible directory. In this campaign, that script was a backdoor called down.php.
From there, the attackers have a foothold. The intelligence files show they used that initial PHP shell to deploy a dropper named Snowlight, which ultimately installed their main stealthy backdoor, V-Shell.
Yes, V-Shell.
And the way V-Shell hides itself in the system is incredibly clever. It masquerades in the Linux process list by naming its kernel thread Quarker/0:2.
Very sneaky.
Yeah, to a casual observer looking at Task Manager, that looks like normal background system noise.
Yeah.
It's like a master jewel thief meticulously breaking into a vault only to accidentally leave their driver's license and a signed confession on the floor.
Yeah, it's a common persistence technique, but it falls apart under scrutiny because of how Linux architecture actually works.
How so?
A legitimate worker is a kernel worker thread. It handles low-level tasks like hardware interrupts, timers, and I/O operations entirely in kernel space. It runs no user program of its own. V-Shell, however, is a backdoor running in user space, just wearing a Quarker name tag.
So if I'm doing threat hunting on my Linux servers, how do I spot the imposter?
You look at the network sockets and command line arguments. Because a real kernel thread is part of the kernel, it will have no command line flags associated with it.
Yeah, no.
And crucially, it will not have user space network sockets attached to it. If you check your processes and see a Quarker process that is making outbound network connections, you are almost certainly looking at a disguised backdoor like V-Shell.
That is a highly actionable tip. Just check the network sockets on those Quarkers. Now, this crew didn't just stick to WordPress caching plugins, did they?
Mm.
The exposed server revealed a broader financial strategy.
It did, and it connects back to the life cycle of cybercrime operations. Sacredar found evidence that earlier in May, before they launched this massive, noisy WordPress campaign, this exact same crew was targeting corporate Java systems.
Okay, shifting gears.
Yeah, they exploited an old, well-known bug in a configuration management server called Necos. Their goal wasn't web shells here.
What were they after?
They use the Nacos bug to quietly extract high-value cloud login keys for AWS, Oracle, and Tencent.
Oh, wow.
The assessment is that they ran this high-value credential theft first to fund the massive server infrastructure needed to scan 1.4 million sites for the WP Shellstorm campaign.
So it was like a seed funding round, just done maliciously.
Exactly.
Steal the AWS keys to pay the server bills for the botnet. All right, let's look at the mitigations here so you, the listener, can stay secure.
Let's do it.
If you manage web infrastructure, patching the Breeze plugin is paramount, especially if you utilize that local Gravatar setting we talked about.
Yep.
You also need to patch the Joomla JCE editor, which was on their target list and is currently on CISA's actively exploited list. Hunt your Linux systems for fake worker threads making network connections and block the known IP infrastructure the researchers published.
Specifically, 137.175.93.126.
And regarding Nacos, ensure you are upgraded to version 2.2.1 or later, and verify authentication is explicitly turned on.
Yes, that's huge.
Because if it was ever exposed without authentication, you had to assume those cloud keys were compromised and rotate them immediately.
Absolutely. You know, this brings us to a really critical realization about the state of our industry.
Yes,
We've talked today about some complex threats, but if an attacker can crash a modern HTTP3 server with completely legal traffic because of an intruder underflow,
right,
and they can bypass the newest, most sophisticated hardware cryptography simply by calling a user on the phone.
Yeah.
And they can run a million site botnet, but forget to put a password on their own server. Are we as an industry too obsessed with building complex new security paradigms?
That's a really good question.
Perhaps the real frontier of cybersecurity isn't in advanced cryptography at all, but in mastering the mundane basics, you know, fixing a single line of math, authenticating the person on the other end of the phone, and just remembering to secure your own admin panels.
That is a fantastic point to end on. Thank you so much for joining us for today's deep dive into these sources. Keep those defenses up, stay curious, and we will catch you on the next briefing.